Amen.
Well, if you were walking through the valley of the shadow of death, and you knew it, somehow you know that death is near, that your end has come, what would people see about you? What would people see about your faith, about your priorities, if you knew that you were in your final days? What kinds of things do you think would be going through your mind if you learned that you only had a couple weeks left to live? Would you be mourning your regrets, thinking about that you wish you would have lived your life differently, things you wish you wouldn't have done, things you wish you would have done more of? Would you be fearful about what is to come? Would you be angry about not getting more time? Would you be trying to think of all of the things that need to be said and done for your loved ones in the time you have left? And again, what would that tell people about who you are, about what you believe, and what your priorities are? This may seem like a pretty depressing way to begin a sermon. These are things that we probably would just prefer to not think about. But death is a reality that we all must face, because none of us are going to live here in this place, in this life, forever. One of the good things that the Puritans were known for was that they taught often about the importance of dying well. And since it's something that we're all going to face someday, maybe soon, relative to eternity, it will be soon, we should be prepared to die well. The Apostle Paul thought about the time of his death. In his letter to the Philippians, he said that he believed he would probably be released from his imprisonment in Rome, but there were some indicators that maybe he wasn't going to make it out alive. And so he thought about his death. And he said in Philippians chapter 1, verse 20, "With all boldness, Christ will even now, as always, be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death." And as he thought about that a little more, the possibility of his death, he said in the next verse, verse 21, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." Now, it was at least partly, probably largely, because of his understanding of death that Paul was able to live so boldly for Christ, because he didn't fear death, because he knew, because of the relationship that he had with Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior, death was actually the better option, because it meant being with Christ in heaven, and he was excited about that thought. And so the threat of death was no longer a threat to Paul. And I believe it is, as someone has said, we are not prepared to live until we are prepared to die. I would maybe tweak that a little and say we are not prepared to live well until we are prepared to die well. Having the right perspective of death will have a great influence on our perspective of life. Otherwise, we can be overly obsessed with trying to stay alive, with clinging to this world like this is the most important thing, when we should be clinging to Christ, because he is most important in life or in death. Not living for this world, living for the next one that's eternal. Now, if I'm being honest about this, I'm still working on getting that perspective. And I'm hopefully making progress toward that end. These verses that we're looking at this morning in Hebrews chapter 11 should help all of us to make some progress toward this. To think about dying well so we can live well. We're going to be looking at three brief examples of faith in the shadow of death. And as has been said in the past as we've been going through this study of Hebrews, the first readers of Hebrews were being persecuted for their faith in Jesus Christ. But none of them had died as martyrs yet. That may have been on the near horizon. And that may have been a part of the reason that for some of them, their faith was being shaken. The persecution was growing. And while persecution started almost right at the beginning of their faith in Christ, and they did well at the beginning, as it is continuing on, some of them are being shaken. And so we have all these examples in Hebrews chapter 11 of individuals who had faith in God in all kinds of different circumstances. In some cases, the circumstances were hard. In other cases, their circumstances were very hard. But even when they faced death, faith was always the right response because God is always completely worthy of our trust. And we see that this morning in the faith of Isaac, of Jacob, and Joseph. The first two of these men in this list have been mentioned already in chapter 11, back in verse 9, because of their connection with Abraham. Isaac was Abraham's son, Jacob, Abraham's grandson. The specific connection that's mentioned there in verse 9 was that they were fellow heirs of the same promise. That promise being the Abrahamic covenant. We're going to be flipping back and forth again today between Hebrews and Genesis, so you want to start turning your way back to Genesis. Genesis chapter 12 is where we find the first mention of the Abrahamic covenant. Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go forth from your country, from your relatives, and from your father's house, to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." Now this covenant God made with Abraham, this was an unconditional covenant. And that means that it did not depend on anything from Abraham's side. It didn't depend on anything from Abraham's descendants' side. It was all on God to keep these promises. Abraham and his descendants just need to believe God. Just believe that he will keep his promises. And we've seen over the last two Sundays the ways that Abraham's faith that God would keep those promises was greatly tested. But Abraham continued to have faith. He believed that God was worthy of his trust, even in those very difficult circumstances. Even though he personally never got to see the fulfillment of those promises. He did not possess any of the land personally that God promised to him and his descendants. He didn't have anywhere to build a house. He was on that land his whole life as a visitor, living in tents. It was the same with his son Isaac, the same with his son Jacob. And so all of these individuals are included in the summary that we then see in Hebrews 11, verses 13 through 16. We read these just a little while ago. All of these died in faith. Abraham did, Isaac did, Jacob did. They died in faith without receiving the promises. But having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. That is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Now, beginning verse 20 of Hebrews 11, we have just a little snapshot, the very end of the lives of some of these who had that hope. The faith that they had to die well. Verse 20 says this, "By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come." And so like was said of Isaac and others like him back in verse 13, Isaac died looking forward. He had been an heir, the same promises as Abraham. God reiterated these same promises to Isaac. Flip back again to Genesis in chapter 26. Genesis 26 and verses 3 and 4. It's God's message to Isaac. He says, "Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to your father Abraham. I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. And I will give your descendants all these lands. And by your descendants, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed." The same promise given to Abraham. And it still hadn't been fulfilled. So Isaac, he went on decade after decade, living in tents, still not in possession of the land. And like his father Abraham, there were some times that Isaac's faith wavered. Now the chapters that are devoted to the story of Isaac in Genesis, there's actually not a lot told about Isaac in Genesis. Apparently there wasn't that much that was noteworthy about Isaac compared to Abraham, compared to his son Jacob. But from what we do see about Isaac, it seems like he spent quite a bit of his life wanting to do things his way. Wanting to do things on his terms. And one of the more significant things that's told about him was when he told his wife to say that she was his sister so that the people around them didn't kill him to get to her because she was beautiful. He learned that from his dad. His dad did that twice. And this was a pretty major lack of faith. This was not right of him or his dad to put their wives in that situation. His faith wavered. The other big story involving Isaac has to do with that blessing that we read of there in Hebrews 11 of Jacob and Esau. And even that started out with Isaac trying to do it his way. It begins like this, Genesis chapter 27, verses 1 through 4. "Now it came about, when Isaac was old and his eyes were too dim to see, that he called his older son Esau and said to him, 'My son.' He said to him, 'Here I am.' Isaac said, 'Behold, now I am old and I do not know the day of my death. Now then, please, take your gear, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and prepare a savory dish for me, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat it, so that my soul may bless you before I die.'" Now you probably remember that Isaac and Rebekah had two sons. They were twins. Esau was the firstborn. Jacob was the secondborn, right after Esau, actually holding on to Esau's heel as the two were born. We learn that Esau grew up to be an outdoors kind of guy. And he was his father's favorite. Again, this wasn't right for them to have favorites among their children. Esau was Isaac's favorite. They probably spent the most time together. They bonded. Probably went hunting together and probably built things together and changed the oil in the camels together. And they bonded. Jacob liked to stay inside. Jacob hung out with his mom more. He probably helped his mom with the dishes. Moms love that. So Jacob was mom's favorite. Now there was this other important detail about these two boys. From before they were born, God gave a message to Rebekah about them. And God said to Rebekah, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body. And one people will be stronger than the other. And here's a very significant part. The older shall serve the younger. So when Isaac was wanting to give this end of life blessing to Esau, in his mind, in Isaac's mind, he's going to be passing on these promises of the Abrahamic covenant to Esau. Well, either Rebekah hadn't told him what God had said, or she did, and he wasn't listening, which is very rare for husbands to do, so it probably wasn't that. Or she told him and he forgot, which occasionally happens, right, husbands? A long time had gone past, many years. Isaac was an old man now. Maybe he forgot. Or he knew, but he wanted to do it his way. He wanted to do it the normal way, when the oldest son would get the double share and would be the most prominent in place when things are passed on. The oldest would be the one in charge to carry on the family name. But you remember how the story goes. There's a lot of details about this we don't have time to get into this morning. But Rebekah, Isaac's wife, overheard Isaac's plan to give this blessing to Esau. She convinced her favorite son, Jacob, to deceive Isaac and to get that blessing before Esau. So he did. And this is the blessing then that Isaac gives to Jacob when he thinks it's Esau. He says, now may God give you of the dew of heaven, and of the fatness of the earth, and an abundance of grain and new wine. May peoples serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be master of your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be those who curse you, and blessed be those who bless you. Now we see in part of that that he was acknowledging the passing on of the Abrahamic covenant in this blessing. And he thought that should go to the oldest son. But remember, God's plan was for that to go to Jacob and not Esau. And God would have worked that out. And Rebekah and Jacob, they did not need to accomplish that with lies and deception. God would have worked that out. But anyway, Esau comes back and he and Isaac figure out what had happened. That Jacob got that blessing. And Isaac was initially furious. But he seems to then recognize this was God's will. And even though Jacob did wrong in how he got this blessing, Isaac seems to have understood it was by God's providence that Jacob got that blessing. So Isaac wouldn't take it back. He wouldn't change the blessing. He recognized God's providence. He said, it's done. This is how it's going to stay. So Isaac went through his life living in tents, not receiving the promises that were passed on to him, But at least at the end, he realized he must trust God for the future. And he passed the promise on to his son, Jacob. And he trusted God that this was his will. And he learned, try as he may, he's not going to change God's will. And so it may have took him his lifetime to get there. But these little details right at the end of his life are how he is remembered in Hebrews chapter 11 for his faith. It took him a while to get there. And finally, he believed. He had to trust God that God would keep his promises in his way and in his time. The account then goes on in Genesis, follows the life of Jacob. What Hebrews 11 emphasizes about Jacob is this. Hebrews 11 verse 21 says, by faith Jacob, as he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. Now Jacob was another one who went through life fighting and quarreling, trying to do much of his life his way, like his father Isaac. Someone pointed out that one of the incidents that most shows how determined he was to get his way was when he wrestled with God all night. You imagine how hard that would be, to wrestle with God all night, being pinned, being thrown around, pushed around, but keep coming back. It took a lot for Jacob to just submit his way to God and to learn to trust him. But Jacob had a pretty rough life in a lot of ways. The faith that Jacob had was tested often, including that these promises that were given to Abraham were then passed on to Isaac and then passed on to Jacob, but he still did not see the results of it. In Genesis chapter 35, verses 10 through 12, we read this. God said to him, your name is Jacob. You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel shall be your name. Thus he called him Israel. God also said to him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you, and kings shall come from you. The land which I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I will give it to you, and I will give the land to your descendants after you. Now, again, in Jacob's life, there are a lot of details that we have to skip over because of time. But Jacob also went through his life living in tents. He lived seeing the promised land and living on the promised land for part of his life, but not actually possessing it. And then later in his life, because of a famine there in the land of Canaan, he and all his family had to move to Egypt. And Egypt was the only place around there that had food. And that was thanks to God's grace and providence through Jacob's son, Joseph, who Jacob had thought had been dead for years. That was because of Jacob's other sons and how they tried to get rid of Joseph. Now, this was a pretty dysfunctional family. But even that could not undo the unconditional covenant that God made with Abraham. God keeps his promises. No amount of mess that people make can undo that. And so here's Jacob. And now he's not even living on the promised land, but he's been reunited with his son Joseph. He even got to see his grandsons that he didn't even know he had. They were born to Joseph. And so when his time on earth was nearly done, he got to bless his grandsons. In Genesis chapter 48, verses 15 and 16, Jacob says this as he's standing there with his hands on his grandson's arms crossed, put his right hand on the younger left hand on the older. Genesis 48, verses 15 and 16. The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has seen, or who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and may my name live on in them, and the names of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and may they grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Now notice Jacob's faith in giving this blessing. Notice that Jacob was not angry with God for the time that he lost with his son Joseph and his grandsons. Notice that Jacob wasn't angry with God for not giving him the land and the other blessings in his lifetime. So by faith, he knew God would fulfill his promises to his sons, to his grandsons. We see that through this blessing. And Jacob understood that God did not need him to be here to continue to carry out his perfect plan. Jacob believed that not even death was strong enough to undo God's promises. And so for all the reasons that Jacob could have continued to fight to get his own way, or he could have been bitter toward God, because of his faith, instead of fighting, instead of complaining, instead of anger, with the strength he had left, he worshiped God. The end of his life, after all he'd been through, the position of his character was pointed to worshiping God. Leaning on top of his staff, says in Hebrews 11. It's a little bit of uncertainty there. If you see that in Genesis, it says he was leaning on the head of his bed. The Hebrew manuscripts were written with all consonants, no vowels. You're supposed to know which vowels go there. And in that particular word, if you put one set of vowels in, the word becomes staff. You put in some different vowels, then it is head of the bed, head of the staff, head of the bed. Almost always context would let you know which one it is. Here, either one of those makes sense, so little uncertainty. But it doesn't really change anything, does it? He was an old man. He needed help to stay upright. It was all the strength he had to stay upright. He worshiped God. He trusted God to keep his promises, even after his death. And that's the direction he was looking as he died. And then there's Joseph. Now, there are so many things that could be said about Joseph to illustrate his faith. So many different times that he demonstrated how he continued to trust God, continued to do the right thing, in some very difficult circumstances. And so it might seem a little odd that the author of Hebrews picks what he does to be the standout example of Joseph's faith. But the more you think about it, it kind of makes sense. And here's what he says in Hebrews 11, verse 22. He says, "By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones." It seems a little odd, doesn't it? That this is what stands out the most about Joseph's faith. If you want to turn back again in Genesis, we can read about that with a few more details. In Genesis chapter 50, verses 24 and 25, Genesis 50, verse 24, says, "Joseph said to his brothers, 'I'm about to die, but God will surely take care of you and bring you up from this land to the land which he promised on oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob.' Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, 'God will surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones up from here.'" Now keep in mind, Joseph had been the second in command, second most powerful person in Egypt for maybe somewhere around 80 years by this point in Genesis 50. He had set all of his family up in the best land in Egypt, the land of Goshen. They had everything they could have wanted. Joseph was wealthy. He was respected. He could have had a king's burial with all the honors to go along with it. And Joseph wasn't living in a tent. But because of his faith, Joseph knew that Egypt was not his real home. And even though he only lived his first 17 years in tents on the land of promise, and then 93 years in Egypt, first several of those years weren't so good, but after that, things were going great for him in Egypt. So most of the time he was there, had great power, great honors, great riches. But he knew that's not the most important thing. What was most important was his relationship with God and what God had for him and his people. That covenant, those promises that God had made, that's what was most important. So instead of trusting that his descendants and the rest of his family would continue to be well taken care of in Egypt, and we know how that would turn out, that's not where his trust was. His trust was in God's promises. He knew that God's promises were better than whatever Egypt might have to offer. And so by faith, he knew the time would come when God would lead his people out, take them back to that land that God had promised. And when they went, he wanted his bones to go with them. Now, not because he thought it was all that significant of where his bones were buried, but it was to demonstrate that he believed his real home was in keeping with God's promises. So that's what was most important. It wasn't the honor, the riches that he had there in Egypt. It was in keeping with God's promises. Now, this is a very strong testimony of the strength of Joseph's faith. That even after all this time and after everything that had happened, he was still depending on God, keeping his promises. And he knew that that land was where God wanted his people to be. He knew God didn't need him here to continue to carry out his perfect plan. Now that thought right there was the big takeaway for me from these verses. The verses in Hebrews. Now, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph came to the end of their lives, and they still fully expected God to work out his perfect plan, even without them being here to supervise or to make sure that it would happen. Now, when I think about my death, I've been thinking about that some lately, thinking through this passage and thinking about trying to die well, what so often comes to my mind is that I need to be here for my wife and my kids. How can I think like Paul thought that dying is gain when there's so much I need to be here for? But we see in these examples of Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, God doesn't need me here to continue to carry out his perfect plan. God is not dependent on my presence here on this earth to get things done right. He doesn't need me here to supervise. He doesn't need me here to make sure he keeps his promises. So I can trust him to do what is right and what is best for my family, for all of you, with or without me. He's not dependent on me. His plan and his promises will continue on. Death is not strong enough to undo God's promises. So we don't need to fear death.